Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and every god I do.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Stephen Duggar. Stephen is one of those quintessential Humboldt County people putting his life together by having several different jobs, working with several different businesses locally that are involved in food. Let's talk a little bit about what those are. You've had a job at Mrs. M's Catering, and that's with Maria Vanderholst. What sort of things do you do there?
We focus on weddings specifically, but we'll do just about any party that people like. Let's see, bat mitzvahs are popular, corporate parties at Christmas, lunch meetings occasionally.
And then you also work at Planet Chai. And what sorts of things do you do there?
I'm the chai brewer. I show up every week, hang out all day, and pour liquid from one container into another over and over again.
Concentrating those flavors, huh?
Yes.
And then you also work at Three Foods in Arcata.
Yeah, I've just started there, just doing prep in the daytime. Actually, their daytime prep is really important to their production because they're very limited in space. Getting everything ready ahead of time is what helps them handle all those busy nights.
So food is really important to you. Where did you first start cooking?
It was kind of one of those things, I think, for a lot of people that go into the culinary industry, and it was by accident. I was in my early years of college. I was living in Davis, California, and I needed to get a job. So I started dishwashing at this little mom-and-pop place called Natural Food Works that's in downtown Davis. And it was just one of those things where it was like, one day somebody said, oh, you know, we need someone to make the chicken salad. Can you make the chicken salad? And I had been sort of beginning to cook at home a little bit more. And I was like, sure, sounds easy enough. And there was a high turnover because there was college students working there. Over time, I kept doing more and more responsibilities, and suddenly I wasn't washing dishes anymore. And then next thing you know, I was kind of the guy who was there all the time, and I was keeping track of everyone. What was really amazing, and what was one of the things that opened my eyes about Natural Food Works, was buying local produce, getting all the things from the Sacramento Valley. And we're talking like really world-class produce. And
sure,
this is the same produce that Alice Waters was buying in Berkeley, like getting really good stuff, just really trying to make everything from scratch and going through the Chapinese cookbook, going through the old Joy of Cooking, going through all these classic cookbooks and realizing, oh, wow, this is actually not as hard and mysterious as it seems. And I'm sort of a shy person, and so it made me have a connection to anyone that walked in the door. I could talk to any person about food, and I could make their day or break it, maybe sometimes too, by serving them a good meal.
Uh-huh.
And that place has another focus, which is gluten-free cuisine. And just seeing people who haven't eaten a sandwich in years come in and just really touch them deeply by having them just serving them a simple meal that they have maybe not had in a long time. You know, and that's when I started to be like, oh, wow, this is actually a really powerful force in the world and is really fundamental to every person.
It seems like that could be an instant link then to the course that you've developed for the North Coast Co-op, which is the molecular gastronomy, because trying to deal with the whole gluten-free and trying to prepare something that's going to remind people of bread when they can't have the grains that they're used to must have been an experiment in that.
Yeah, there was a lot of experimenting with different gluten-free combinations, and at the time, I was not as well-versed as I am now, and so I didn't fully understand everything that was going on, but that was my introduction to some ingredients that are less conventional, like xanthan gum, which is a total staple of the molecular gastronomy movement and those kind of alternative thickeners, different things like that. But as far as actually gluten-free cooking goes, wheat gluten is a very particular chemical, and it is very powerful, and it is very hard to replicate.
Yeah, you almost have to create something altogether new and different.
Yeah.
And it's not try so much to replicate that.
So I've always had this focus of trying to accommodate people with special diets in my cooking and just trying to please the individual, and it's really hard. And often I find the best way isn't to try to make a false substitute. It's just trying to work around limitations and say, okay, well, this is what we're working with. What can we make with this? And I've always been a very ingredient-focused chef.
And so let's talk more about this molecular gastronomy. It just doesn't sound as appetizing as I'm sure it is. But it's the idea of using scientific knowledge to solve culinary problems. And so it is something that it's like a whole branch of the food science world that does this. Tell me more about what that is.
Well, first off, there's a lot of people in the culinary world who really hate the phrase molecular gastronomy. And it is a phrase I have adopted only because it kind of, the words convey the meaning pretty clearly about what it's about. I think anyone can hear that and go, oh, this is like a science food thing.
True.
And so there's kind of two different things. There's molecular gastronomy as an idea of using science to understand food. And then there's modernist cuisine, which is a specific group of chefs and people who have adopted the ideas of molecular gastronomy and food science and have implemented them in the fine dining world in order to create a larger variety, unexpected dishes, just new, as a palette for new ideas. And kind of like, if you have those tools of science at your disposal, there's no problem that you can't solve, no dish that you can conceptualize that cannot be made hypothetically.
Now, is this where I've been seeing a lot of things made with liquid nitrogen? Is that that sort of
bent? You're in modernist cuisine, there's a lot of adaptations from the food manufacturing world or from different scientific applications, a lot of scientific equipment. So you get things that are very extreme at their job. So you get liquid nitrogen is very, very cold. You get computer-controlled temperature controllers that can keep a water bath to 1/10 of a degree. You get things like the autoclave, high pressure, high temperature. You get things like the foam-making devices, all these different ideas that you would see in a laboratory, the rotary evaporator, all these different things that you...
The what?
The rotary evaporator is a device. Basically, it's a distillation machine. And so you can use it to distill aromas into liquids.
Holy cow.
So that would be something that you would find maybe in the perfuming industry or in manufacturing of flavors that would go into manufactured food.
Uh-huh.
Something like that.
Wow. What other devices are there? We're on a roll now.
Oh, man. There's so many. It's really hard to say. There's just anything from like a temperature hot plate that stirs a magnetic stirring device. There's the vacuum aspirator. There's the...
So the vacuum aspirator, is that like what they do where they're... Is it marinating under vacuum or cooking under vacuum?
Actually, it is more for reducing a liquid under vacuum.
Really?
So if you have, like, for example, balsamic vinegar reduction is a common thing you see on menus these days. So you take the balsamic vinegar, and in a restaurant, normally you'd put it on the stove, and the heat causes it to boil. But maybe you leave it on the stove too long, and it burns. With the magnetic stirring on a hot plate is attached to the vacuum aspirator, you have a temperature control, so it will never burn, and it's constantly being stirred. It's also under vacuum, which means that at zero pressure, water evaporates at room temperature or slightly above room temperature, and so the liquid's evaporating, all the water's leaving it, but all the solids that make balsamic vinegar taste like balsamic vinegar are staying in the flask, and they remain, and it shrinks in volume and concentrates the flavors.
Well, whoever knew that molecular gastronomy would be so fascinating? This is Jennifer Bell, and I've had the pleasure of speaking with Stephen Duggar. Thank you, Stephen.
You're welcome.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and I forgot how to ask.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.